numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is a numbers game here on a Tuesday. It's Matt Brown actually in, pinch hitting for Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin is behind the glass. We will talk to Drew Dinsick a little bit later about all things sports. Drew just does everything, so we'll talk NBA mainly, but who knows? He probably has thoughts on the Derby. Mm-hmm. He might have thoughts on the draft. He's definitely got some thoughts on what's going on in some random sport we didn't even know that was happening. We found out he was a great Olympics handicapper. He knew all of the cross-country skiing odds. So we'll talk to Drew about a little bit of everything. Andy McNeil will be here a little bit later. We'll talk the NHL playoffs with him. And then Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Newsletter will also be here. Talk some baseball with him, see if he sees anything that we might be able to get in on. As we approach, you know, let's say enough of a sample size for us to start to maybe form some opinions, at least some educated opinions here in Major League Baseball. So, kick things off here, and real quickly, we'll just blast through the NHL side of things because LGR is no longer. Kelly, our tickets are dead. The Devils close out the Rangers 4-0 in Game 7. They got two in the second. They got two in the third. Devils goalie, a 22-year-old Akira Schmid, allowed just two goals in their Devils' four wins. He only gave up two goals in their four wins. Devils win their first series since 2012. They're going to face the Hurricanes starting on Wednesday, and this is just RIP. All of my futures tickets. I have nothing left in the NHL. I'm going to have to ask Andy what I can get in on today. I need a sweat. If it's going to be on one of the ancillary televisions, I can't just go down sitting here with every single game having some sort of one-off ticket. No, I need a team to root for, a team to back that was LGR, and they're dead.
Oilers, baby. Hop on the bandwagon.
You were on LGR.
Yeah, I was on LGR.
You've hopped off now.
Well, I did exactly what you're talking about. I grabbed one ticket from the East and one ticket from the West.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
So, yeah, that the East one's dead. Now I got the West one still alive.
All right, so you're all in on the Oilers. I'll see if I'll join you. Maybe I'll join you as the...
Me. We'll go to a game here in town, root against the hometown Golden Knights. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, so maybe I'll join you. I don't know. I need a new team. I'm open for suggestions. Hit me up on the Twitter machine, at MattBrownM2. Let me know what team I should go ahead and start rooting for. Maybe, look at the odds as well, because I want to win something here. I want to win something. I don't want a short shot. I want to win something if my team were to go ahead and get this done. But let's get over to the NBA, because this is what everybody was tuning into last night, Game 1. And, Kelly, we talked about that Joel Embiid did go out for shoot-around. He ended up about mid-afternoon getting fully ruled out. Adrian Wojnarowski came in and said that that was going to be the case, that he was not going to play, despite the fact that he did do the light shoot-around. Didn't need him. Sixers go out without Joel Embiid. They beat the Celtics 119-115. And if you looked at the box score, and often if we just kind of covered things up and we just gave you a couple of the statistics for you to go and look at, you'd say, okay, well, you know, maybe the Celtics had a bad night shooting. Well, they shot 59% from the field. Oh, yep. Okay, well, they must not have taken advantage of getting to the free throw line. They made 17 of 18 free throws.
Yep.
So you look at those two things and you would go, well, they obviously won the game. Well, you can take a look a little bit, keep scrolling over there in that box score.
Out-rebounded the Sixers.
Yeah, out-rebound them. 16 Celtics turnovers to just 6 for the Sixers, and that really and truly was the difference in this game. It seemed like every time the Celtics had a chance to kind of step on the throat of the Sixers, they would turn the ball over, and not just any types of turnovers. A lot of them were very sloppy. A lot of them were very ugly. And I happened to be listening to the Boston feed on the radio as well. And they were none too pleased with what was going on out there on the court. And sure enough, as it all played out, it did come down to haunt them. The big story, of course, James Harden, 45 points, 17 of 30 shooting. He was 7 of 14 from 3. He had 6 assists to go along with all of that. I texted you at the end of the game, and I said, it seems like the talks of James Harden's demise was a little bit premature here. Now, listen, he did have 11 days off. He's an older player. He had 11 days off to really rest and get healthy. There's another thing that goes into this that I thought was interesting, and I want to see if you buy this or not, but they're talking to James Harden after the game. Hey, James, how did you do it? How did you crank it up? How did you go for 45 without Joel Embiid out there? And James Harden said, hey, listen, I have one of the very best players in the world out on the court with me every single night. I don't have to do that. I could do that if I needed to do that. I don't have to do that. I needed to do it tonight, so I went and did it. I think there's at least a little bit of truth to that. I do think there's a little bit of Harden opting to just let Joel Embiid do what Joel Embiid does on a night-to-night basis. You've got a guy that goes for 30 every single night. And I believe that there is some truth to that. Now, could James Harden be the elite scorer that he was earlier in his career on a night-to-night basis? I think that that's a little bit of a stretch. But he probably could score more than he does. He probably could do a little bit more on that side of the ball. But I think there's some truth in him saying, I have Joel Embiid out on the court. Well, I don't need to go and do what I did tonight.
Yeah. I mean, he has definitely turned into more of a facilitating point guard at this point in his career, is really what his true position is, as far as opposed to a high-level scoring shooting guard that we saw back in the Houston days. A lot of, and then even in Brooklyn, but that was kind of in Brooklyn where him and Kyrie were kind of shifting positions a little bit. I think you're right. Yes, he absolutely goes into games with Embiid with that mindset. And I think in a situation like this, it has to change. The question is kind of like what you just brought up, Matt. It's the question is, could he do this every night still if he needed to? I don't think so. I think that the stats show over the past couple of years, just his ability to get to the rim, get to the free throw line, those have declined. But like you're saying, it is a different role for him now. So I don't know. We're going to definitely see if Joel Embiid misses more games here. And I don't know about you, but I would sure expect he misses game two now.
I was about to say, I think they bought him an extra game to rest because you steal this one. Why don't you give Joel Embiid an extra day off? And then if you do that, you've basically extended his rehab for another week at that point. Now you're talking about a guy who's had 20 days off, essentially. 20 days off, as long as this thing isn't very serious, which, who knows, maybe it is. They're not really giving us a ton of details here. But if it's not incredibly serious, 20 days off, he should at least be able to get out there and give them something, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, unless I'll put him and Jimmy Butler in the same boat, because we're going to talk a lot about, the Heat and Knicks later, too. But it's, look, unless they are 90-plus percent, Matt, and I just don't know about it, there's no reason in my mind to play either one of those guys in game two. You go back home game three, reset this series with home court advantage already in the bag, and yes, like you're talking about, get both of these guys a ton more time to rest with their injuries.
One thing I wish we would have talked about a little bit more yesterday whenever it did, it's because if we're so early here and there's so much ambiguity as to what these injury reports actually mean, we had Joel Embiid out there doing the shoot-around, was the fact that What from a player prop standpoint would we be looking at if he didn't go? And I texted you, and it's one of those things, like, there are awesome tools out there. You can go, you can get these on-off splits, and you can look. When Joel Embiid is off of the court, Tyrese Maxey averages a little over 29 points a game whenever Joel Embiid is not out there on the court. Tyrese Maxey did not even have a good shooting night last night. Now, that was just, I think, a little bit of a bad variance. Some of those threes he shot, he was wide open. They looked like they were in and out. Anyway, he still gets there regardless of where I'm getting at this. 23.5 was his point prop that was listed. He goes for 26, even on a night in which, the shots weren't necessarily falling. Something we can look at again in this game. If Joel Embiid does get ruled out, if they list Maxey still in that kind of 23.5, 24.5 range, I think it's something we have to just kind of continue to ride here, because it's been night in, night out that he's able to get it done. Tobias Harris goes for 18. DeAnthony Melton goes for 17. And P.J. Tucker plays 37 minutes in this game and does not take one single shot or one single free throw. I actually saw ESPN Stats and Info came out and said, that's a record. And Kelly, I bet you we could probably have guessed that that was a record for someone to play 37 minutes in a playoff game and have no field goal attempts or no free throw attempts. And that's just a guy knowing his role, right? Yep. P.J. Tucker is not out there to score. He knows he's not out there to score. And unless he gets one of those very, very, very wide open corner three looks, he's just going to go out there and just be a menace on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, know your job. He was over on the bench yelling at teammates and stuff throughout the game. It's know your job, P.J. Tucker. Great game for what he's asked to do on a night-to-night basis. From the Boston side, Matt, I do think there's some concerns to take away from this game. I think we've seen throughout the playoff run last year, turnovers were an issue for this team. They obviously, 16, a massive amount last night. Jaylen Brown, I think that there's, whether this is a coaching thing or a thing with him of, look, you got to be more aggressive sometimes. When you're 8-for-10 from the field on the night, you're the second best player on this team. You got to demand the ball, take more shots than what you end up doing. And Joe Mazzulla, look, there is a big, big difference between regular season NBA coaching and playoff NBA coaching. And that was – I don't think that was a great performance at all last night. I didn't understand the switching they were doing with Horford and Harden. It didn't make any sense to me. They kept letting Harden get the same opportunities up at the top of the key, and he took advantage of it throughout the entirety of the game. That the out-of-bounds play, the inbounds play I texted you about, I'm like, you're going to Marcus Smart down two? Like, you're trying to pick on James Harden in the post with Marcus Smart when you got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on your team? I get it. Harden's not the greatest defender in the world, but you cannot be going to what your third, fourth best offensive weapon in that kind of situation. So I think there's some big questions to take away from the Boston side of this game as well.
If you don't like the Celtics, if you don't believe in the Celtics, this series line is still Celtics minus 180. You're still getting plus 150. They're a game up with the 76ers, so that is the updated series line. Now, the game does get back singularly in action tomorrow. That is the Celtics currently favored by 9 points in that game, pretty much along the lines of what we saw in game one, about 9.5-ish, 10-ish, something like that. 218.5 is the total, and I'm kind of with you, Kelly. I mean, listen, do I expect another 45 from James Harden? I do not. But do I expect a little bit of variance going towards Tyrese Maxey shooting the ball a little better? I probably do. And I don't know. I think this game might be a little bit tighter than a 9-point spread. That's not to say that I'm going to get in on the Sixers or anything like that, but certainly something that I'm not running to the window to bet. And yep. Let's see if maybe Drew Dinsick is going to be running to the window to make any bets on the games either tonight or tomorrow. Drew, when we come back on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology, fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in the great state of Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you do have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-522-4700. I was also looking here. I Googled Aaron Rodgers Met Gala. Kelly, all I get is NFL analyst pressures Aaron Rodgers to go to 2023 Met Gala. Are they talking about us? Because we were pressuring him to go to the Met Gala. So apparently it was at least pressure. Don't know if he ended up showing up or not, so we'll have to figure we'll figure that out.
The only thing I see is pictures from when he was at the Met Gala at some point with Olivia Munn. And
well, we know that was a long
– that was we know that was a long time ago, yeah. And just the start of bad decisions made by Aaron Rodgers.
Well, or good decisions made by the by his companions, depending yes. on it all depends. Maybe Drew Dinsick knows if Aaron Rodgers ended up at the Met Gala last night as he was making his tour around New York, making all of the appearances, ringing the bell. I mean, he didn't ring the bell, but he's going to do that at some point as well. He's going to do all the New York things. Drew Dinsick from over at NBC Sports Edge, also the Deep Dive podcast. You can find him on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, man. I love the Aaron Rodgers shade. Great, great vibe for a Tuesday morning in the off season. So well done, guys.
Real quick, before we get into the NBA stuff, how did the NFL draft all turn out for you? I know you and I did Gil's podcast. I got fortunate on a couple of things that I ran pretty pure on, wide receivers, offensive linemen, things like that. So it ended up a little bit better for me than I actually was expecting heading into it. But it was a weird one this year.
Yeah, did that happened? I wasn't paying attention. The NFL draft was horrific for me. Not really that horrific. Like ultimately, Richardson going four ended up being a huge bailout. If I hadn't kind of in the closing day really taken a hard stance on Richardson under 4.5, which was priced in the plus 300 range, then I would have been looking at an enormous red number for the draft. And it was pretty tilting, really, because I feel like at the end of the day, the kind of macro reads that I had ended up coming up pretty correct, but it ended up being, somewhat misled that CJ Stroud was the guy for Texas or for the Texans. The macro stuff we talked about is, I mean, ultimately the Texans are going to come to their senses and take a QB2. And, you know, from multiple reports, you know, weeks ahead of the draft, the front office had done their quarterback ratings and had Levis above Stroud. But the owner comes in at the 11th hour and says, nope, it's Stroud, take him too. And then that trickles the dominoes of them trading, you know, their entire future to go get Will Anderson at three, which was one of the more indefensible, I thought, trades that I've seen on draft day in a long time. And honestly, like, I have nothing against CJ Stroud at all. Like, I loved his college, you know, loved his tape, loved watching him in college, loved his performance against Georgia. All that was great. I hope he has, you know, something as a pro, but I got to tell you that the stewards of the franchise in Houston pretty clearly are not going to, you know, not, you know, their process underlies some issues that I think are going to handicap him from, you know, ultimately succeeding at the NFL level, which is a bummer. And, you know, really just the entire, you know, the teams that took quarterbacks here, Panthers have some pieces, but I think that team is going to be, you know, tough to have a tough time competing next year, particularly on offense. And then, you know, the Colts several years away from really kind of, you know, reaching their potential. And then, you know, Titans, of course, you know, using a round one pick on offensive lineman with short arms and then coming back and trading up and giving away future assets to get Will Levis in the second round. Like, I kind of feel like all of these teams are going to be pretty bad next year, maybe bad for the next couple of years. And maybe we're going to be talking about, you know, Panthers, Texans, Colts, Titans, you know, two of those four, if not three of those four, I think are going to be in the mix for, you know, quarterbacks and the draft picks in 2025, 2026.
Yeah. That's kind of a little preview to a little bit later. We're going to look at some of these NFL division odds as well. And man, Jags are only -150 to win that division right now with with the quarterbacks that are going to be going in that division. It seems pretty interesting. So let's look last night. Sixers get the outright win, 119-115. No Joel Embiid. Did you take anything away from that game, or is this just kind of like, you know what, whatever, the Celtics kind of had a bad game. They turned the ball over too much. They'll probably bounce back in game two.
Yeah, I thought about that all morning, trying to come up with a good answer on, you know, was there a takeaway to be had here? And realistically, this hopefully was a wake up call for the Celtics and maybe opens the door for some opportunity to get involved with some Celtics futures. I'm definitely not losing faith in them in this series. You know, a one game outlier performance from James Harden is, you know, it's cool to see. It was fun to watch. I don't expect that in game two. I would be surprised if Boston doesn't take one and out of game three and game four. And I'm genuinely concerned about when and what type of condition we see Joel Embiid again in this series. The Philly bench really, really was struggling offensively. I think the Celtics, you know, played a pretty lazy game. I think the coaching around the Celtics is a giant question mark about them ultimately reaching their potential this season. But the talent is undeniably still all there. So I think the Celtics win the series. I don't know that it's going to be as comfortable as I thought, having already kind of donked game one here. But, you know, I'm not at all concerned about going back to the well with this team. First half in game two is a bet for me. And Celtics to win in five, I think, is not a crazy price right now.
Last night, we see the Nuggets just continue to kind of look a little bit more like the Nuggets. Certainly Nikola Jokic is just absolutely on fire right now. Everything that he's doing out there on the court. I think my takeaway from this, and we talked a little bit about this as we were looking into it, Kelly and I were looking into it yesterday, we were like, you know, if the Nuggets play like the Nuggets did the majority of the season and not where they kind of sputtered down the stretch, they probably should beat this Suns team. And I kind of just continue to feel that way after watching last night.
We agree. I thought that was a very impressive performance by the Nuggets. I mean, obviously Chris Paul getting hurt fueled a ton of that, but you know, the big four for the Suns might be the big one and a half, and that's a problem. The Nuggets in general, deep, you know, just being the deeper team was not something that I had on my bingo card. But Jokic being the best player in the series looks to be the reality, and I think Nuggets potentially getting this done in four or five is the what I would expect right now. I don't really think that the Suns have a ton of answers. I guess, you know, because it was a very weird game. There was a lot of really, really good looks, open looks, and they just weren't falling. And that kind of set the tone for just a little bit of an uglier game, you know, more of a knockdown, drag out fight, as opposed to just more of the free flowing offense that we saw from the Nuggets in game one. I still didn't see anything in Phoenix's scheming defensively that tells me that they're going to keep the Nuggets, under 110 in game three or game four. And if they can't find shooting, if their 3-point shots aren't going down, and oh, by the way, they are not, then I think this is potentially going to get out of hand here pretty quickly. Little karmic retribution for Suns and four if the Nuggets come back and give them a taste of their own medicine here. But either way, I think Denver ought to be the favorite to win the West. I think Denver ought to be second choice by a bit after the Celtics to win the title. Ultimately, if the Nuggets make a run here, it's going to save my playoffs to a degree, because I dug myself a little bit of a hole in round one, back in the Grizzlies pretty aggressively.
Drew, let's go to the late game tonight. Lakers and Warriors kick off the series here. Right now, Warriors about a 4.5-point favorite in that one. Let's not talk about the game singularly tonight, but just the series overall. How do you see this thing playing out? Do you think it goes deep? Do you think that one team has any sort of mark advantage in here?
I'm really interested to see this one play out. I don't have a strong opinion on the series overall, other than I think Warriors minus 145 isn't giving the Lakers quite enough credit. But the real kind of disconnect for me is, if that series price is efficient, then tonight's game is bananas incorrect. I do not think the Warriors warrant 4.5 points at home. If these two teams are, as close as the market thinks, particularly considering the Lakers have an extra 2 days rest, Warriors coming off a game seven, with a turnaround, now playing a much, much tougher defense, to me sets up for an under, and a Lakers money line play tonight. And I think as the series goes on, I give the Lakers absolutely give them a puncher's chance. Anthony Davis's health is ultimately going to drive all of this, because if he gets hurt at any point in time, then all of a sudden the Warriors have four out of the five best players in the series. But with Davis playing at an all NBA level, particularly defensively, I think Warriors are going to have a tough time. This is the Steph or nothing show at this point, and I think the Lakers can take advantage of that early in the series.
Drew, we got 15 seconds. Two horses we need to bet on Saturday.
Ooh, Brad Cox horses. Give me some verifying in the two, and give me some Angel of Empire. I think the Cox horses look ready to pop.
You can find Drew over at NBC Sports Edge. He's over there doing content for you on a daily basis. The Deep Dive podcast is something you need to go and subscribe to. So just go in. It'll be in your podcast feed every time they put one out. And, of course, on the Twitter machine at @whale_capper. Drew, thanks for the time today, buddy. Appreciate it.
Hey, best of luck, you guys.
I'm going to bet those horses just blindly, I think. That's where we're going with this. Andy McNeil and NHL on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's a lot to bet on in the next 30 days. For a limited time, you can subscribe to VSiN for only $9.99 American. That gets you insight into daily baseball best bets, NBA and NHL playoff things, VSiN upcoming Kentucky Derby betting guide. I think that comes out on Thursday, so you want to go ahead and take advantage of this $9.99 offer. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests here on the network. Tools like our betting splits, it lets you see where the money and the movement is for every single game, and not just this game and stuff in the future as well. Also, a top VSiN experts leaderboard viewing betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. You can sign up now for just $9.99 American over at VSiN.com. That's $13.61 Canadian. Andy knew that. We're going to be talking to Andy McNeil here in just a second. Kelly, real quickly, coming through. Breaking news: upon further review by Nielsen, the Super Bowl from this year, the most watched of all time, 100 averaged, this is not the peak, averaged 115.1 million viewers. That is beating out the 114.4 Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl of 2015.
Wow. I got distracted by your first sentence, though. Upon further review, like what, they had to go to the replay center?
I'm guessing, they needed to get all of the information in from all of the different places that you get. Because, I mean, I, I'm I'm guessing streaming numbers play into this now because,
yeah,
you know, that people do view it streaming, right?
I don't know if Nielsen does streaming numbers, though.
I don't, man, I don't. You're asking the wrong dude. We don't know. I don't have any idea. But anyway, most watched Super Bowl of all time. So if you watched it, you were part of history. And if you didn't watch it, you were left out. This guy probably washed it up north. He is your friend and mine. You can find him over on VSiN.com breaking down the NHL for us over there. He is Andy McNeil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. I'm still recovering from my my Boston Bruins blowing a 3-1 series lead, but I'm doing all right.
Are you chalking that up to variance in hockey? You've talked about a ton about this, right? I mean, ever since I've been doing programming with you, you said, hey, listen, this is a very high variance sport. Sometimes it hits the post and goes in. Sometimes it hits the post and goes out. Are you chalking that up to variance? Or are you looking at this and saying like, no, they actually just completely blew it?
Yeah, they completely blew it. I'm not going to give them any kind of flowers here. I mean, 3-1 series lead, had game five in hand pretty much in terms of, controlling the play, just couldn't get it done when they needed to. And really, really, really embarrassing way to finish a great season, a season that I want to forget and pretend never happened, because I mean, it's all meaningless now.
All right, Andy, we do have four series that are starting. We got two of those games that are going to be going tonight. Two of those games are going to be going tomorrow. So let's kick things off here with the Panthers and the Maple Leafs series. Now, if you want to bet this game individually, Leafs are -170 tonight, +145 on the Panthers. But how do you see this series playing out?
Well, first of all, I do think there's some value in Florida at +145 or better. I know DraftKings has that price, or at least they did a few minutes ago when I locked in my write-up. There's a +150 out there in the market. At least one shop is hanging that right now. But I mean, we're seeing anywhere all the way down to +130, +135 for this Panthers team. I think they're a decent bet at +145 in game one. I don't think it's a bet that's going to win as often as it's going to lose, but I think they should be priced closer to +135. So definitely some value, or at least I think there's some value there. As far as the series goes, I think, my prediction matches up pretty closely with what we have here. I have the Leafs winning this thing about 61% of the time, which equates to a line of what, -155. So kind of in the midpoint price, though. I guess where I disagree with how this series is priced, it's just that the Panthers odds in game one are longer than their odds in the series. And I don't think that matches up with what I think is right. So betting the Panthers to win game one. I think just looking at this series, I mean, Florida, not a great defensive team, but they played good defense against the best team in the NHL in round one. And the Maple Leafs, who were a pretty good defensive team in the regular season, not that great against the Lightning. In fact, they got outscored at even strength. Florida was really good at even strength, had a 52% expected goals for percentage in their favor against the Bruins. So I think there's some signs of life here for the Panthers, and some things that the Leafs should be worried about. But I'm not going to bet the Panthers to win the series. I'm just going to take a shot at them jumping out to an early 1-0 lead here tonight.
Talking with Andy McNeil, our NHL expert. You can find him on Twitter at Digital Gambler. The second game tonight, Kraken and the Stars. Game one is -175 for the Stars at home, +150 for the Kraken on the road. 5.5 the total. What do you think about this game and then the series overall?
Well, I'm sorry. I know you were probably really looking to get in on this Kraken team. I know they're your boys, but I have
to pick a new team. Actually, I was LGR. LGR's dead. Your guys are dead. My guys are dead. I have to pick a new team. A new allegiance is coming at some point today, Andy. So you can talk me onto a team. I'm there.
All right. Well, I think the Dallas Stars should be priced around -200 to win the series, and that's where it's trended. It opened around -190, and it's up around -205 at DraftKings now as far as the series price goes. I'm pretty neutral on the games. I think Seattle, they're a deep team. They've relied on their four lines that can produce offense all season long, but the Stars have more high-end talent, and obviously Dallas has Jake Oettinger and Seattle doesn't. So big mismatch in goal there. I think this series could be a little bit tighter than some people maybe expect. I saw some pretty high predictions on the Dallas Stars, but yeah, I've got them winning this one 66% of the time. No bets for me right now.
Let's head over to tomorrow, the Devils and the Hurricanes. This is not quite a coin flip, minus 120 in game one on the Hurricanes, even money there on the Devils. Anything in the game in the series overall?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see DraftKings open this one up at plus 115 on the side of the Hurricanes in terms of their price to win the series. That moved plus 110 pretty quickly. A lot of other shops had opened this one up as more of a pick 'em, not with the Devils as a favorite, but DraftKings put the Hurricanes up at those odds. I would say they're probably the value play at those odds. I've got the Devils winning this one 51% of the time. That big, you know, impressive victory in game seven against the Rangers did a lot for their chances. I think against the Hurricanes, it showed a lot, but you know, it's one of those things where my preference would be to bet the Devils. I think they're the better team in this series. I don't like where Carolina has been at for a while. You know, they were 24th on offense between March 12th and the end of the regular season. That was after Andrei Svechnikov went down with an injury. He's out for the rest of the season. Tuukka Rantanen might not be back for this series. He had surgery to repair a broken hand that he sustained in the first round. So, you know, Carolina's a tough team. They've got the game plan to probably kind of contend with the Devils. But I think, you know, their lack of offense, which really showed up in the first round versus the Islanders, you know, could be a problem versus this Devils team who has a lot of speed. And, you know, conversely, I think if you're looking to a bet to kind of take a flyer on, look at Andre Palat at 55-1 to score the most goals in the series. I mean, this guy's tied Steven Stamkos with 11 goals in last year's playoffs on the Tampa Bay Lightning. He had a great first round in against the Rangers, didn't score the most goals on the team, but he's going to be in the mix playing on a line with Jack Hughes and Erik Haula. And he's a playoff kind of guy, right? He's going to come through when it matters. And he did that in the first round. Hopefully he can do it a little bit more in the second round. But I think that bet's worth a shot at 55-1.
Andy, the final series, Oilers and the Knights. This one also about a coin flip, at least in game one. Minus 115 for the Oilers on the road. Knights minus 105 at home. Is this as close as a series as game one pricing, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I mean, the Vegas is at home here, so that's why Edmonton isn't a bigger favorite. But home ice hasn't mattered a whole lot in the playoffs. I'm showing some small value on the Oilers at minus 110. I do have them to win the series at minus 145 or better, up to minus 150, really. I think they'll win it 62% of the time. And I've got their odds closer to minus 163. So, you know, not a huge edge, but enough to justify a play here. Edmonton, I think their strengths really, you know, match up well against Vegas's weaknesses, which, you know, Vegas did a really poor job of suppressing shots, not so much in the first round against the banged up Winnipeg team, but, you know, in the regular season, they weren't the best team on defense in terms of, you know, suppressing shots and limiting the chances of the opponent. And Edmonton, I mean, just that high octane offense, obviously they got a really formidable top six, you know, with 300 point scorers and five guys that are 30 goal scorers. It's going to be a tough series both ways, but I like the Oilers to win this one, and I think their star power will carry them over the Golden Knights. I think they've also got a decent edge in goal. Stuart Skinner wasn't great in round one, but you know, Laurent Brossoit, I mean, it's pretty shaky ground to be standing on to have this journeyman goaltender kind of leading you into the second round here. So we'll see what happens. Maybe Vegas makes a switch if it doesn't get off to a great start for Brossoit, but right now I've got Edmonton to win the series. That's my only series bet of the second round so far.
Edmonton to win the series. You heard it here first. It is Andy McNeil. You can find him over on VSiN.com and also on the Twitter machine at Digital Gambler. Andy, appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Going to have to drop in. Maybe that's my new allegiance, Kelly. We're going to go Edmonton. Numbers game coming back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, authorized gaming partner of the NBA, hits the court with a special playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a one-game parlay with up to four legs or more. Get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss one leg. Now, enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, parlay selection featuring throughout the postseason menu. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get your back your $25 bonus bet if one leg in your parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make the appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for the terms and conditions here. 21 years of older to wager. New and existing customers can get this offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Reward issued. Non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. And if you do have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer is not available in Washington, D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. So we are looking here, Kelly, and I am wanting to at least touch very quickly. We didn't get to the second NBA game last night when we were kind of doing the recap at the top, and rightfully so, because, look, that first one was the real shocker of the evening. You have Jason Tatum go for 39, 11, and 5. You still lose the game without Joel Embiid out there on the court. Not to kind of gloss over the fact that the Nuggets beat the Suns by 10, 97 to 87. Chris Paul did leave the game with a groin injury. That is something that we will monitor as we go forward. But Nikola Jokic, 39, 16, and 5. And that is with Jamal Murray only scoring 10 points and going 3 of 15 from the floor shooting. And they still win by 10 points. And you start to dig in and you say, how does this happen? Well, Kelly, Kevin Durant, you say, oh, 24 points. He was 2 of 12 from 3. He was absolutely brutal. And then you look at the Suns bench, 4 points on 2 of 16 shooting, 71 combined bench minutes that they were out on the floor. They got 4 points on 2 of 16 shooting. The Suns only got to the free throw line 5 times in the entire game. It was just, outside of Devin Booker, who went for 35, it was just pretty brutal for the Suns up and down.
Yeah, this is, look, we saw in game one, if Durant and Booker have big games, you still can't win. You need both of them. Like you said, Durant struggling from 3 last night. And then I think the Denver side is maybe even more shocking here, where it's Jokic and he didn't really get much help and you still won by 10, right? Like that's pretty impressive. I think this Denver team is just – we touched on it with Drew. They're just too much for Phoenix. Phoenix is another summer away from being able to reconstruct this roster to really balance it out with what they have with Durant and Booker.
Well, they did bring up last night. Again, I think it's hard for us to really wrap our brain around because, again, it did happen so long ago. That was his 15th game on the floor last night as a Sun, right? I mean, so it just – it seems like it's been there long enough for them to gel and get things going. But, again, his 15th game on the floor with them.
Yeah, I just don't think they have the pieces. I understand that, and that's obviously going to get better the further they go along in the playoffs. I just don't think they have the pieces to really compete with some of these other teams at this point. So we'll see how it goes when it goes back to Phoenix. But this was kind of Denver 4-1 in my mind the whole time. I don't have any reason to change my mind on that right now. With Chris Paul leaving is – I would have downplayed this, I think, earlier in the season, but with how thin their bench is and other scoring outlets that they have, right? Like, it's a bigger deal than it would have been. So, yeah, him going out, and if he misses time, growing issue again for Chris Paul, this is something we've seen before. He misses time, like, this is going to be really tough to act.
It's extended minutes for somebody who hasn't been contributing is basically all it will be. It'll be someone who has to step in into the starting lineup, and whoever that person is someone Payne, that's going to be coming in that has not been contributing at all. So I'm with you. I think this one is dead. So let's head, guys, after the draft, DraftKings just starts throwing up markets left and right. There's markets all over the place, and according to this, the divisional odds are showing that the Chiefs in the AFC West are your minus 165 favorites. I wanted to start here, Kelly, with this one because this one, to me, is the one I have the least amount of interest in. It's the Chiefs division until I see otherwise. I'm not going to do this whole, oh, I think the Chargers, I'm not doing that anymore. It's the Chiefs division until otherwise. So I'm not a real interest at 165 because I do think there is a chance in which the Chargers take a step forward. I think there is a chance in which the Broncos step forward with Sean Payton and all of that. So I'm not like running to the window to bet it. But at the same time, I'm kind of chalking it up as the Chiefs and moving on.
Yeah, what a year, what a difference a year makes in the division of death, right? Yeah. As we are talking about this heading into end of last season. But Yeah, I'm with you. This one, from a betting standpoint right now, and probably till we enter the season, because I don't know if we really expect many changes to happen with any of these teams besides, what, Austin Eckler potentially leaving, I guess, the Chargers. I'm with you. It's the Chiefs are the one team that we know exactly what they are in that division. They're still damn good. They're still the class of the NFL. I'm not laying 165, though. Like you said, I think there's a good chance the Chargers and Broncos make significant step forwards. And like, the Raiders might not be terrible this year, but that is still going to be a tough division, and I think they might end up having a pretty bad record because of that.
AFC East is the Buffalo Bills at plus 130, the Jets at plus 230, the Dolphins at 3-1, and the New England Patriots, still coached by the GOAT, Bill Belichick, if you believe that Bill Belichick is the GOAT, 8-1 in the AFC East. Kelly, I think these odds are right. I think they are by far the worst team in that division. Oh, I think that the roster, and if you look on paper, boy, they are just not as good as these other teams. I still think the Bills have the best roster. I still think the Bills are the best team in that division, but I do think that the Jets and Dolphins have a puncher's chance. I would just want a little bit more on one of those two teams, which is why this one I'm also not incredibly interested in, strictly because I would like the Jets to be more in that 3-1 range. I'd like the Dolphins to be more maybe a 3.5 to 4-ish type to one range. And since it's not there, I don't think it's incredibly bettable. But I think that obviously the addition of Aaron Rodgers has closed the gap a ton for the Jets on the Bills. And then if the Dolphins can keep Tua healthy, when Tua's out on the field, they have a pretty decent offense, right? I mean, it's just the problem is, as we know, I'm going to cringe every single time he gets sacked, just like y'all are every single time this year. But the Dolphins have a really good roster as well. I'm going to pass on this one, but if I had to, let's just say I gave you a free $100, I'd probably pay the Jets at just a little bit longer of a number.
Interesting. If I had to do that, I think I'd still go Bills here, but it's probably not a division I end up betting. I'm with you. The Dolphins, I'm not sure there should be that big of a separation between the Jets and Dolphins number. I think those two teams are a little bit close. Like you said, when Tua's been on the field, that team's been great. I like the weapons that they have on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think there's any reason why we can't expect that team to be very competitive once again this year. It's going to be a brutal division. The Patriots could have a really, really bad season, partially because of that, right? Same thing of what I just said about the Raiders. I don't think Patriots are all that great, but the fact that they have to play with this level of competition inside their division, it could make things 10 times worse.
AFC South, and this is the one that I am interested in, the Jags are minus 150, the Titans are 4-1, the Colts are 5-1, and the Texans are 7-1. I like the Jags at minus 150. I like them a lot here in the AFC South. We're looking at a Titans team that is likely to have Will Levis starting at quarterback at least some point pretty early in the season, if not from jump street, because, again, they don't owe Ryan Tannehill anything. They can move on from him as a clean break. The Colts are definitely going to go with Anthony Richardson, if not from the very get-go, at least by game 3 or 4. They're going to move to him. Jim Irsay's already come out and said that. He's the one who signs the checks. They're going to have to play him. And then we know the Texans are going to be going with a rookie quarterback as well. So you're going to give me a Jags team in which Trevor Lawrence started to play like that guy last year. He started to take the real steps. And just because he didn't step in and he didn't pull a Burrow and a Herbert and just do it from the very, very beginning, doesn't mean he can't still be a very good quarterback in the NFL. And I think he started to really show that. Let's remember, the Jags are also going to get Calvin Ridley stepping in to be the number one receiver there. So now it's no longer square peg round hole with Chris Kirk trying to be the number one receiver there. That's not going to have to be. He can be a true number two. Ridley can come in and be the number one. You have Lawrence moving forward as well in his progression in the NFL. Kelly, I like the Jags a lot here, especially considering just the competition, right? It's the Titans, it's the Colts, it's the Texans, who are very likely to have three teams with three rookie quarterbacks starting this year. I think minus 150 isn't quite enough.
Yeah, I was just doing some quick shopping around. Looks like points bet about the shortest number you can get right now, minus 149. Best number you could get on the Jags there, 149. We see 150 at DraftKings. Yeah, it would be Jags. Jags are nothing for me here. Who do you think finishes second in this division? I mean, let's play that game real quick.
Yeah, I mean, look, do we get 70th percentile Anthony Richardson? If so, Colts, I think, are super live. The roster's not completely dead.
That's kind of what I'm thinking,
too. Do the Titans decide to not go with Will Levis and just play Tannehill and just play to a 9-8 record or something? Play to an 8-9 record? Maybe then it's the Titans. I just think probably the only team that's dead to me, in my opinion, would be the Texans.
Yeah.
But boy, this, yes, I think it's the Jags, like, clearly. And then you could tell me any one of those other teams finishes second, and I would believe you. You could lie to me, Kelly, and I would believe you. That's how ridiculous that one is. We'll get to some of these other divisions a little bit later in the show, but when we come back, we'll talk to Joe Sheehan about all things Major League Baseball. Stick around. It's a numbers game here on VSiN.